the state of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning. This is the time and place set for the special rules hearing of the Supreme Court. We have three proposed rules before us today on this hearing. All have been published in the State Bar Newsletter to give the public and the bar notice of these filings. And we'll go in order that they were placed in that notice. The first one would be the proposed amendment of SDCL 15668. And this deals with offers of judgment. This was proposed by Representative Sean O'Brien of Brookings. Is there anybody that wishes to speak as a proponent of this rule? And I might add, this is a fairly informal procedure. Just simply come to the podium if you wish to speak when your rule is brought up that you wish to speak on. Okay, nobody that's a proponent. Is there anybody that's opponent of proposal number one? Okay, if not, we'll proceed to rule number two. This is the proposed amendment to SDCL 19914. And this is a proposal offered by Mr. Mark Marshall, who is the chairman of the Board of Pardons and Paroles. I see he is here today. I assume you wish to speak, Mr. Marshall. Does any of the members of the court have a question for Mr. Marshall on this proposal?
Yes. my question goes to the procedure, and what is your argument in favor of the fact that the Supreme Court, under its right to deal with internal rules, has any right under that procedure to go outside of that and deal with administrative hearings and control something that the legislature has proposed? Isn't it for the legislature to do what you're asking?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, but I also believe that the answer is not clear. And I think the source of the problem is the relatively unique nature of the parole board. The parole board exercises quasi-judicial, quasi-legislative, advisory, and non-administrative functions. And I think in the capacity of revoking parole, we are acting in a quasi-judicial manner, and that would bring it within the purview of this court.
Okay, without going into that any further, let's consider the merits for just a second. You know, especially in relation to someone's parole or probation being revoked. The rule already is that whenever they go out on probation or parole, they kind of sign their life away. I mean, they can't spit on the sidewalk. They can't violate any laws, any ordinances, blow their nose in public, and just about anything else. And all the state has to prove is that they've not been as good as they were supposed to be. Well, it's extremely hard for them to live up to that standard in the first place. So why should somebody have their probation or parole revoked just on the hearsay word of somebody writing up a report that they have no right to counter it? Isn't that a violation of due process?
Your Honor, I think the way that you've posed your question reflects.
You know what my answer is, but what's yours?
First, Your Honor, the rule was, our request is based on this court's decision in Bray, which seemed to suggest to me that the rules of evidence would apply to administrative proceedings. I think it's been very clear, as Mr. Nelson pointed out in his submission to the court, that the rules of evidence have never formally applied to parole revocation proceedings. And the purpose of submitting the rule, the request, was to make that clear so that the board did not have to begin applying the rules of evidence on the concern that Dubray would be found to hold to apply to it. In my letter to the court, I pointed out the number of hearings that the parole board conducts, as many as 95 revocation hearings a month. To have all of the witnesses necessary to provide foundation for the documents would turn what's normally a half an hour hearing into a day hearing. It would render the system completely
per case.
So this is an unusual proposal in that it doesn't seek to change anything. It seeks to maintain the status quo, what you're already doing.
That's correct, Chief.
All right.
But isn't the board, isn't it an executive branch board?
No, I don't believe it is.
Well, what is it then?
It is quasi-judicial. I'm sorry.
But it isn't really under the court's jurisdiction. I mean, we've never had any jurisdiction. We get, what, one appointment to it, or?
You have three.
Three appointments?
The governor has three. The attorney general has three. And I wish I could tell you exactly what the board's function is, and I can only fall back on SDCL 2413.3, which describes it as quasi-judicial, quasi-legislative, and I'd add, it appears quasi-executive.
Let's see. All kind. I mean, any executive branch agency, or not any of them, but a lot of them do quasi-judicial functions, and that doesn't give us jurisdiction over them. I mean, the Department of Labor does quasi-judicial findings and hearings, and that doesn't give us jurisdiction to do anything with the Administrative Procedures Act. That's really a legislative function.
Well, I'm not sure that the parole is a 126 proceeding.
Well, then maybe that has to come up as a legal question to this court, and we decide it as in that regard rather than try to pass a rule.
Well, if you hold that we can revoke probation without adhering to the rules of evidence, it seems entirely inconsistent for the board to apply the rules of evidence to parole. Because again, as Mr. Nelson has pointed out, those have been used almost synonymously.
I have a question, Mr. Marshall. I thought that under what they call the new system, that was a contested case, or at least the constitutional rights that were not available under the old system apply to the new system because of the presumption of release if you do things.
Well,
was it?
That's an interesting question, Justice Center. It raises an issue that this proposal does not really address. You're correct. Under the new system, an inmate is presumptively entitled to parole if the inmate satisfies the components of their individual program directive. If that takes place, the inmate's released on their initial parole date. If the inmate is not in compliance with his individual program directive, then a non-compliance hearing is held, which is not probation nor parole as such, but yet a different breed of cat. And those hearings are even more brief, perhaps, because they typically come up in the context that the inmate has not complied with DOC rules. And I don't want to bog you down with too much detail, but the DOC rules component says you can average 1 for 0.75 points per month. you get disciplinary points for major rule violations. If you have between 0.3 and 0.75, you're marginally compliant. Over 0.75, you're non-compliant. And if you're non-compliant, then you're kicked over into a discretionary hearing at from 1 to 24 months from the date of your initial hearing. This rule arguably doesn't touch those non-compliance hearings.
Really?
Because a non-compliance hearing is not a hearing to determine parole. It's simply a hearing to determine whether you're in compliance with your individual program directive, and that may well be a pure 126 hearing. In my 3.5 years on the board, I have not seen anyone appeal a non-compliance decision. Whether that appeal would go directly to the circuit court as the parole hearings go, or whether it would go to the secretary of the Department of Corrections as a 126 hearing, I can't answer that question because I simply don't know.
Now, some of this problem, or the volume of hearings, as a result of the new parole system? Or is that an unfair question for you if you haven't maybe seen it before and after? But
well, I see it in combination because we conduct both old system and new system. The volume of hearings for granting parole may be a function of the new system, because of the discretion afforded to the board in setting the next discretionary hearing date. Under the old system, by rule, that hearing date came up every 8 months. Under the new system, the board has a discretion to fix it at 1 to 24. So more hearings may be generated for granting parole on that side.
And then it's just the volume of people you have incarcerated causes you part of it, too. I suppose that's increased as well.
That continues to edge upward. The population in the South Dakota prisons is pushing 3,300 currently.
Any further questions for Mr. Marshall?
You know, one thing, back to the original question. Maybe the fairest way to describe this is the board is an executive branch entity, but it's exercising some quasi-judicial functions. Would that be a fair way, maybe, to, or the best way to describe what's going on?
I appreciate your comment, but I'm not sure I can agree, because the statute, again, 2413.3, says that the board exercises functions independently of the Department of Corrections. And I wish I could give you a clear answer, but I simply can't. This is a problem that I think I'm more anticipating may exist than may actually occur. But if it is as I suspect, it will impose a tremendous burden on a board already burdened.
And we do appreciate your monthly reports, by the way, that you provide based on, you know, how many hearings you had, and that it's appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. Any further proponents for the proposal number two, the amendment to 19-19-14? Any opponents to the proposed amendment of 19-9-14? If not, we'll move to the third one, which was the proposal for a new rule to be designated as SDCL 16-229.6, and this relates to electronic searches of records of the court. This is a proposal by the court administrator's office. Is there a representative of that office wishes to speak? Ms. Sudbeck.
Good morning. State Court Administrator's Office has been automating our court records for quite some time. Since 1989, we've had our criminal justice records on the CJIS system. We're working on developing an automation system for our civil records. And this system that we're talking about this morning is actually automation of our civil money judgment docket system. So it's like an e-docket, if you will. The judgment that comes down from the court stays intact, stays in the paper file. This replaces the docket card system. This program will have the capability to provide docket information electronically and statewide. You can also go into the system and select out the information by county. We've been working on it for over a year. We've had several meetings with abstractors, representatives of the State Abstractors Association, and they've made some very helpful suggestions to us that we've incorporated into this system. And the way it'll work, users can access the system on a one-time or an infrequent basis if they don't think they're going to use it all the time. There's a fee for that. Or they can, the abstractors requested a monthly fee. We've set up a monthly or an even annual. If you want to reduce the cost even more, you can set up an annual account. With the monthly and annual fee, you have unlimited use of the data. You can search it for as long as your subscription is valid for the month or the year, and you get the updates. You can download it to your system. We had a specific question from abstractors about what format it would be downloaded in, and it will be in a format so that they can download it into whatever computer program they have in their office and search it, sort it however they want to do it.
When you refer to abstractors, that includes anyone dealing just with title insurance?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe. I think there is a representative from the Abstractors Association that can speak to that. But we had...
Or I assume anybody wants to pay the fees would
anybody that wants to pay the fee can download it and have access to that information. It's not limited. We thought that there would probably be three main groups of users of this system. The public, anybody that wants to look up judgment information about anybody has access to this system, and we anticipate they would be the one-time or the infrequent user. The abstractors, land title companies, attorneys, and also we have a lot of requests from our clerks that these big information data brokers like ChoicePoint and LexisNexis are accessing our data, bringing their laptop computers into to the clerk's offices and mining data. We've talked to them. They are happy to have this system and to be able to access it without leaving their office.
Would you have an idea as to the average monthly expense of an abstractor, say, in Sioux Falls or?
We have an idea as to how many searches that they, one of the meetings, one abstractor from Sioux Falls said that she does 130 searches per day. We know how many judgments are entered into each county and how many updates are entered into each county by year. We have that information. So the smaller counties aren't going to use it probably as much. So there's that lower end fee for anyone who doesn't use it as much.
So do you see this a burden on small abstract companies or and a boon to average or large abstract or title companies?
I see it depends. If they find themselves in a situation where it's more cost effective for them to pay the monthly or the annual fee, then they could go that route. It's there at their option. We've offered both fee structures.
How did you arrive at the fees? Is this something that's commensurate with what other states charge? Or?
Not with what other states charge. It's commensurate with the cost of the system and the amount of judgment information we have. We have close to 400,000 judgments entered in the system. And realize that judgments can be active for a 20-year period if they're renewed. From the computer, the IT department says that with those over almost 400,000 judgments, there's 1 million activities associating with it. These would be any updates, partial satisfactions, discharge and bankruptcy, so they're constantly getting updated. It's a lot of information in the system.
Do you know what other states charge for this similar service?
I don't have it with me, but I did look at that, and their database, I'd have to look at how big their database is compared with ours. Some of their states have a lot more judgment information in there. But so some of their fees are higher than ours, some of their fees are lower. So we did look at that. We also noticed when we researched the other state courts that they offer the historical database, and so that's when we added that as an option.
So how did you come up with the amount then? It ties to the data entry fee,
We know how much it costs clerks, I mean, just on staffing studies, how much time and how much it costs to put the information into the system and to enter it. We have the computer development costs from IT. We have credit card transaction costs that every time somebody enters their credit card, because we're not going to save their credit card information for security reasons, every time they put their credit card in to get another search, that adds a cost. It won't be that for the monthly and the annual, but for the one-time user.
So this is an addition. All right. This is an addition to, there will be some additional transactions then against the system than we normally would see otherwise. Is that what you're saying?
For the credit.
And so this is a user cost that we're passing along to the user.
We've tried to tie it as closely as we can to the cost of the system, so it's a user fee. Mm-hmm. We're not a for-profit operation. We don't want to be, but we've tried to recoup the cost. There is an attorney general's opinion, advisory opinion, granted, you know, not binding, but he said with public record information, you certainly cannot resell that information because there's a statute that prohibits that, but you can recoup the reasonable cost in providing that information, which is labor, materials, supplies, and that kind of thing. So we've tried to tie it in with that. And I think that also goes along with best business practices to tie it in with the actual cost.
The number of judgments is somewhat surprising. That's one judgment it's more than one judgment for every two people in the state of South Dakota. Does that include like non-money divorce judgments?
These are just money.
They're just money
These
judgments?
Are just money judgments.
So it would include small claims, but not.
Would include small claims too. I guess I should back up on the divorce judgments per presiding judge rule, and they just revisited that. We're not changing anything that's not currently in the docketing system, and for years the presiding judges have wanted the divorce judgments to be docketed in that judgment docket system. Most of those are going to have money involved, some of them do not, but all of those are docketed per PJ rule. So this doesn't change what's in our docketing system or what has been for years.
Thank you.
So who will be using? Who do you anticipate will be using this?
Well, we anticipate the public. Some people are just curious about what their neighbors are doing. They're going to be using it. Abstractors, land title companies, attorneys, and the information data brokers. We don't know. I mean, until we roll this out, we really don't know who's going to be using it. But that's who we anticipate. And with the people that sign on for a monthly or an annual user agreement, they are going to sign a user agreement. There will be, well, let me back up too. On the web page, there will be a list of instructions on how to use the system, but also prohibiting reselling that data under the statute. The users that sign on for the monthly or annual, those will be paid in advance, and we will have a user agreement that they will sign so that they know the limits with using this information, and then we're going to be able to track, you know, who uses that information and how much use there is. We'll have a lot better data, you know, once this rolls out. We've been working on it for over a year. It's still in the process of being worked on. We anticipate that it'll be rolled out January 1st of next year, and so we wanted to come at this rules hearing opportunity and get a rule to make the fee structure effective before we put any more time and money into programming it in case we need to make any changes based on what the court decides.
Will this supplant the paper docket judgment cards that are in the clerk's office? So
yes.
So abstractors will no longer be able to go in and look physically?
Correct. They'll have access to this at their home office, that they'll be able to download all this information and put it into whatever format they want. They'll be able to check back to see if something's been updated.
So the clerks won't be typing up the judgment cards anymore?
There will be no more docket cards. The judgment will still be in the paper file, but this will replace the docket card, just like the docket cards at one time replaced the docket books, where everything used to be handwritten in there, so.
So these public records would not be accessible then to someone without a computer?
They would be. For somebody who doesn't have a computer and who doesn't want to go to the library and use a public computer there, they can go to the clerk's office and access this information, because the clerk will have access to this web-based system and be able to take the money, the credit card, and run it through for the person and get that data, do the search for them.
Any other questions for Ms. Sudbeck from the bench? Anything else you wish to say?
Well, I know that there has been an objection filed, and I don't know if you want me to address some of our comments about that or call me back.
I think I'll call you back and let them say their piece first.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other proponents for this proposal? There being none, any opponents? Mr. Marino, I understand you appear on behalf of Mr. Schroyer.
I am.
Okay.
With the court's permission, Mitch LaFleur is here, who has an abstract plant in Rapid City, and I think he's probably in a better position than I am to answer any specific questions. I'm here because Mr. Schroyer, who filed the objection, couldn't be. He's climbing Mount Albert in Colorado, as I understand it. He did file the objection, and I thought in the abstractors who are here and quite a number wanted to have someone from our office here, because that office filed the objection for the land title. But with your permission, I'd like to introduce and have Mr. LaFleur come up and address any specific questions. I can give you an overview. As I read what I'll call our proposed amendment to the proposed new rule, there's two changes that we've made. The first is we added the word or made a reference to unlimited next to the bulk basis, and that is it'd be about the fourth line down. Available by bulk users. I know there was a concern that the searches and access be unlimited, that it not be restricted or limited. And we're not certain that using the terms bulk basis or bulk users also means unlimited access or unlimited searches. So that suggested change is more of a clarification than anything.
Right.
Does unlimited mean repeated, or does it mean you can follow the information all the way back into the clerk's office?
I assume that it would mean repeated. You know, if you're paying $5 a crack, you're probably going to think about repeating. But if you've paid the $3,000, sure, then it would cover repeats, of course. The second suggested change is we included what I'll call an abbreviated, a more abbreviated schedule that breaks counties down by population over 20,000 and under 20,000. This allows the title company some flexibility to choose to access information on a $5 crack basis or on a more global basis. And when I say global, I mean more of a county-wide basis. Basically, it's something in between the $5 per crack and the $3,000 for the whole state. This type of an arrangement, and I think would be more beneficial and provide more flexibility, particularly to smaller abstractors who may want to confine their searches and the like. So it's something that we think would enable, kind of provide more of a hybrid or middle of the road, and provide more flexibility than the original rule would provide. And I know that the Land Title Association, which has met and discussed this extensively, in fact a committee was formed to address this particular proposal itself, has some concerns, and with the court's permission, I'd like to call Mr. LaFleur up at this time to address some of those concerns and any specific questions that the court may have.
All right, Mr. LaFleur.
Thank you.
I'll do what I can here. I was a member. First of all, I'm Mitch LaFleur. I am an abstractor, and I own a title company in Rapid City. I'm also on the board of the Land Title Association of the state of South Dakota. So I'm here on behalf of those various entities. And I also was a member of the committee that came over and met and worked with the court administrator's office when we tried to work through some of the issues in terms of getting where we are now. And I think there's a couple issues the court needs to eventually resolve. One, what's the effect of adopting this rule on the public? And two, what's the effect cost-wise on both the public and our profession? Do you want to charge the public, Joe Citizen, money to access a public record? Because right now...
Well, we'll either have to do that or go to the legislature and get general funds.
I understand. I'm just saying, but that's the issue. One way or another, you're going to fund it through this process or legislatively.
And are you suggesting then we go to the legislature and get general funds?
Well, what I'm suggesting is that under statute, under 36.13.20, which is really our authorizing statute that allowed us access to public records, that generated or gave us the right as abstractors, licensed abstractors, to go to a public office in our county to access whatever records are there without cost. I mean, that's where we're coming from. I'm just trying to set the basis for where we're at today.
What's that site?
36.13.20. And that gave us access to any county offices and their records to create abstracts of title and related indexes, which we obviously need to do in order to track issues pertaining to title. Part of that are obtaining records of judgments in order to determine whether or not they create a lien against real property in a particular county. So the only purpose of looking at judgments is as it relates to a particular county. County in Minnehaha doesn't matter to us in Pennington County because it's not a lien against property in Pennington County unless it's been transferred. So as it affects a person that's a public Joe Citizen, he's going to go into his county office and he checks to see if he's got a judgment against so-and-so or through his representative of title company. So the central indexing, to the extent that it's statewide, really is irrelevant to that function. One of the things that we did generate and received as an accommodation from the court administrator's office was the ability to do two things. One, do a search by date forward, because we aren't going to search names on their system. That's not really a viable alternative to us, because we've got the requirement that we index in our own plant these same records. So all we want is the volume. We want to know whatever judgments were entered. We're going to put them in our own indexes and then search our own indexes, because we've got more sophisticated software that will search that's going to get better results than what the state has. So that's part of the basis and the foundation as far as the cost issue. You've got the public cost issue, you've got the cost to us. We tried to come up with a compromise with cost, because if you look at the way they computed their cost, they've indicated it's the basis of the cost, the amount of money they've got into creating the system. My question is, what period of amortization did you use to get a return on your cost? And the response I got was that they used the cost of the computer system, you know, the life of the computer system. Well, 5 or 7 years doesn't reflect the return you're going to, you know, those records are not going to go away in 5 or 7 years. I think you can amortize the cost over a lot longer period of time and reduce the cost you're charging. For example, if you go on the PACER system for bankruptcy, it's 7 cents a page for any screen you go into. I think that's a more realistic comparison than $5 a name. If you take the person off the street and have him go in and try and figure out, Wayne Rowe, who's an abstractor here in South Dakota for a long time, there's a lot of ways to search Rowe. And you got to figure out which one is right, because they might have got the name wrong when they sued him. They might, there's just variations, and we're stuck with trying to figure out which name goes with what. So if you do that at $5 a pop for the public, I mean, the abstractors, we're not ever going to do that. We're never going to go in and do it $5 a deal. We're going to do it bulk in some fashion. So I think cost is an issue. I think effectiveness may be an issue. There is some.
Just before you go on sure. On the cost and this bankruptcy, is the when you search this, not being knowledgeable about any of this, so you got to understand, sure. You're starting here with somebody on ground zero. Now, this bankruptcy, is it a similar kind of a system where you go in and check it?
I think it's based on whatever, like you go in and you'll do a search for a case file name or a person's name. Mm-hmm. And I think that for each screen that you go into, it costs you basically 7 cents for each screen you go into, and they keep track of it and they bill you quarterly or whatever.
Now, is there any other system that you use electronically with any of the other county offices or any other state agency that you might
The only thing search? I can think of, we have a relationship with our county treasurer's office where we can dial in modem-wise to get at their records.
How does that work?
It's a flat fee, and I honestly can't remember what it is. It's not an excessive charge, I know that, but it's, and I don't know if every county does it the same as ours does, but it's a fairly antiquated system, frankly, because you're still doing the dial-up modem thing. It's not an internet-based deal, but.
So if I'm understanding you, then what you're pointing out is that you think this per hit or per search here of $5 is too high or whatever it was.
I think there's a concern about that. I think in the smaller, here's what you're going to run into from an abstractor's point of view. In the smaller counties, they don't have nearly the volume that, say, Pennington, Brown, Minnehaha, that we're going to have. So they may be thinking that they're going to do the $5 a hit thing, and I'm not sure how that's going to work, but maybe they'll get, they probably aren't going to do the bulk electronic transfer. A lot of them aren't. So that's why we reference the unlimited access, because some of them may go in and do searches. I would assume that if I was in their shoes, I would do it on a date certain. I would want from July 1st, 2005, all the judgments that were entered docketed on that date. And if it's $5 a deal, that's fine. And maybe they won't have that many, and maybe $5 a deal will be a lot. I'm certain it might be cheaper than $3,000 a year. Because you're talking about going from no cost at this point to a significant increase.
Are you then questioning whether we should even go into the computerized system and that you still want to go up to the courthouse and go through the cards? Or are you telling us that the computer's a good thing, but it's
honestly
too pricey?
Candidly, I'm not sure how much. I think it can be a benefit. I think there'll be some bugs to work out. I think that there would be a trial period, because one of the things that you're undertaking, the state's undertaking, whether they understand it or not, is the responsibility of ensuring that the judgments are docketed properly.
Well, we're doing that now.
Well, you are and you aren't, because we're getting a list. I mean, in Pennington County, they actually adopt a bait system where there's a number that's assigned to file, but there's also another base number they use that you can compare the number of judgments to the number of judgments you're getting and do a double check and confirm that you're not missing anything. You're not going to have it. Now, I have to admit, all counties don't do that, but we do have that benefit in Pennington County.
Well, we're also assuring that they're in time, too. Of course, we do that right now, I suppose.
I think that problem, because we're going to go as a date certain anyway, but you're right. If they tell us that as of July 5th, these are the judgments that are docketed and that's the official record.
We haven't data entered them.
That ought to be a problem we can resolve. And I don't think
we're going to be insuring them. I think we're going to have a big disclaimer. I'm sure of that. I don't think we're not going to guarantee that all those records are accurate. We're just going to guarantee that those are the records we have.
Right. But there's another step in the process, and it's on the computer, and it's There is a difference as opposed to what we're doing now, because it's our people who are going down and getting those, and we're entering them into our system manually.
So you're ensuring the data entry, and now we're going to be doing the data entry.
Right.
That's what
and
you're
now
saying.
We're, yeah.
You don't have the opportunity to look at the hard copy.
That's not exactly true, because there has to be data entry onto the docket card. You guys aren't looking at every file. I presume you're looking at the docket cards.
We're looking at the docket cards.
So there's got to be data entry, whether it's the physical paper system or the computer system.
True. But there's another step in the process. Maybe not. Maybe it'll be the same.
But we
lose our base system, and that's we'll live with that.
I'm still not sure I understand your answer to my question. I mean, we could just scrap this whole proposed rule and say we're going to keep the cards. Now, are you, by your written proposal, it appears that you're buying into the computer system, but you're telling me today you don't know. Do you want the computer system to replace the cards? Because we don't even need to talk about money if you want to keep the cards.
I think there's a I'm waffling on my answer, because I'm not certain which way I really would prefer to go. I think that there's obviously computers are great. I mean, they are a great tool for information access. They speed things up. In this case, the electronic, you know, the potential of being able to electronically download that docketed information into our databases is a benefit that I think is positive. So I think to that extent that's a benefit, and I think it's probably worth, in the ultimate long run, the benefit of having it. There are a lot of counties in our state that don't have that. I mean, we've got a fairly large system, a lot of counties that are more sophisticated, that's a benefit. And it's going to be a bigger benefit to them, some of them, sooner than others. Some of the smaller counties aren't automated at all. There are counties operating without computers, believe it or not. I think, and so there are some issues out there. And cost-wise, there's some huge disparity between who can bear what costs.
Now, the abstractors are limited to counties, is that in my...
You have to be licensed in a particular county, and you have to have your index of records back to patent in the county that you operate in. And that ties in...
Each abstractor, how would this work with their individual counties then? I guess I'm still not understanding exactly where...
See, most counties have...
Start with the ground here. The abstractors are set up by county.
Right.
And then they gather the information by the county. And that's
correct.
Really that, if they're only operating in that county, that's all they're interested in.
Right. There are a handful of entities that have... abstracts in more than, or companies in more than one county.
Now, for instance, yours, is that how many counties do you cover?
We have one plant,
okay.
One county.
Okay.
You'd have to have a separate plant, say, in Meade County if you wanted to do work in
that's
that
correct.
County.
At least that's what the current law is.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So
that could change as well, right?
It could.
Is this flexible enough to deal with changes that go that may come forward in abstracting?
I think it's flexible enough in that sense, but the point, getting back to this point, you have to remember that your records, part of that's derived from the fact that your liens are created on a countywide basis. Unless you're going to say, change the law and say that a judgment that's obtained in Pennington County automatically becomes a lien statewide, which isn't a very practical alternative. Right now you have to take an affirmative step to transfer that judgment from one county to another in order for it to create a lien in another county. One of the things that is a concern is to ensure that renewals of judgments and transfers of judgments are picked up in this system. And I assume that's part of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So
it does give you more of a statewide basis than you had before.
It does, but it really doesn't serve any purpose, because all I care about are liens in my county. I don't care about judgments anywhere else in the state, and that's part of the reason of the proposal, too, is that I don't care. $3,000 deal for me, why do I want to pay $3,000 to get a statewide access when I only want the records from Pennington County? And that's kind of why we put the population thing in a little bit.
Okay, that brings up a point. It may just be the way this is drafted, but when I originally read this, I thought the amendments that you're proposing would allow the same data to be received, but the recipient, if they resided in a small county, would pay less. But this is really intended to say, if you want information for one county,
yes,
you pay $1,000.
If you're in a county that's less than, and if you want the whole state, you could, and I don't, and...
Okay, so if you're in a county, if the county's greater than 20,000...
You would pay that, whatever.
$1,500, and that would only be for one county's information.
That's correct.
But you would pay $3,000, you're okay with that?
If you want those, that's right.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Yeah, that would be the answer.
I guess I'm not up on my population as much as I should be, but how many counties do we have in the state over 20,000?
You shouldn't ask that, because I don't know.
You don't know either.
I think that the, you know, the...
A dozen, maybe?
I don't, the bigger county, I don't know, I really don't. The bigger counties, obviously, are in excessive. You know, I would think that 20,000 is not very many people. You're probably going to, most of the larger counties are going to be paying that above that second level. And there are some entities that are probably going to elect to just do the $3,000 deal because they have multiple counties and they're going to, it's cheaper for them to do that.
Are you speaking for the association or for your own abstract company?
Both.
Okay.
Because I am on the board, and when the board did take the position, and I'm here to support that proposal, and it is an awkward deal because there are some concerns about how the, you know, I think there should be some kind of a trial period, maybe where you have a backup for a period of time to make sure that we get some of the bugs worked out, which I think the state was contemplating anyway, the court administrator's office, but there would be a period where you'd want to make sure that the thing was working right.
Well, in a way, it is a trial period because we have 1 to 2 rules hearings a year, and if the wheels come off or it needs fine-tuning, I mean, we're back here in February and probably be back here next August, so this is not chiseled in stone. I hope you understand that, and I'm sure you probably do. And since it hasn't up and running yet, you may be correct that we may have to fine-tune it.
You know, as looking at it from a non-abstractor point of view, I'm not the other... And maybe it's not important. I just don't know how that works with the public, with Joe Citizen off the street, in terms of going in and using the computer and whether or not he understands that he's really got to limit his search to a county if he truly wants to find, you know, what, and also just the name thing. I mean, those are separate issues. They're not really an issue for our industry because we obviously, hopefully we know where we're at on that and can deal with it, but.
So my understanding then, let me just paraphrase here, then what you're trying to do is get an intermediate charge here for counties that are smaller than 2.
Well, and also to take into account that some of us may only want one county, that we don't need access to the whole statewide system, and therefore we really don't want to pay that extra chunk because the cost right now is a cost that we may or may not be able to move on to the public. It's not like you can do it on a per file basis. You may have to just increase your fees as a whole to try and take in to accommodate these additional costs. And if we can avoid that, we'd prefer to. So.
All right. Anything else you wish to say?
Well, I appreciate your time. Thank
any
you very
other questions
much.
From the bench?
Two things. One, how did you come up with the number 20,000?
I think that we had a breakdown on how we charge dues to our association or something, and we just kind of pulled a couple of those numbers from that. So, you know, I was trying to protect the smaller counties, and I thought that if I use that population, those over are going to pay the bigger sum, because most of them, I think, are going to be under that population, if I was guessing. But.
And then the second thing, the last thing I have is this going to save you some money since you won't have to be sending people over to the courthouse every day or twice a day or...
It may save some, but like you mentioned earlier, on divorce files, probate files, you may have to go get the file anyway. And if you have to manually, we're not certain how this electronic transfer thing is going to work. If we can electronically download into our indexes, our computer system, that will save us some time. If we can't and we're still manually indexing, then we're really not, we're doing the same thing we're doing now, except we're going to just have the benefit of printing from our computer those docket cards as opposed to going over to the courthouse and getting the docket cards and then manually putting them in. And I think most of the abstractors are going to be in that boat. I don't think initially there's going to be that many. They're going to have that capability of electronically transferring that bulk data into their plants. Or if we get there, it's not going to be without some cost or IT costs or whatever, you know, where we ourselves have to figure out how to make that work.
So when you get the divorce case, mm-hmm. are you going to get a card that just says see file and then you're going to have to go over to the courthouse?
Yes. I mean, we always have to get divorce files. I mean, because you can't,
right.
you're aware of how that works until you go through the file and figure out whether there's really a, because they don't always docket judgments and divorces anyway, and so you get the file and you, so what we need to know is just that there's a divorce there, so we know to go get the file and then figure out what money's owed to who.
I suppose long term, the whole thing will be electronic, and you probably won't have to leave your plant, but that may not be during your tenure in mine.
No, that's...
But it appears that's, where, like it or not, where we're probably heading.
Well, everything is... electronically, you know, it's just such a huge assist to everybody. I mean, just the practice of law has changed in that sense that
sure.
you get access to information, it's great, but it has to be someone, like in this case, it's by county, it's not statewide.
Any other questions?
I have one more question on the bankruptcy. When you pull down a bankruptcy file and you look at it, and you say it's 7 cents a page, how many pages would you normally look at? Or would you just look at one or two, or are we looking at a whole bunch, or what do you look at?
It can be a number of pages. It could be 10 plus.
Okay.
I think they talk in terms of screens, if you print a screen or something, and you.
So it could be less than a dollar, or it could be, you know, right around that amount to look at a transaction, maybe,
sure.
by the time you look at all the pages.
Sure.
Okay.
When you say page, you don't mean the actual copy of the bankruptcy documents, the petition, the order of discharge that you, are you?
Well, I think they refer to screen, and so the only thing if you go to the screen of a document, I don't know if they then break that down into the pages of the schedules. I don't recall, frankly, but they may charge it by page, but that might be why the amount's smaller too. But you know, and I think it's based on viewing and or printing, but I'd have to go back and play with it again.
What I had in mind is that I assume someday everything will be optically scanned, and so you wouldn't have to go to the courthouse for anything. You could just simply get on the internet and read the entire file, but everything would be optically scanned into the records.
Except now it's redacted or dedacted.
It's redacted, yeah. They mean
which makes it also kind of hard on us to figure out which John Smith we're dealing with, but that's part of the world.
But you'll see the entire file right on the screen rather than having to go down to the courthouse to see whatever's there. I assume we'll have that someday, that
technology.
I do too.
I've got one more.
Okay.
All right, so what's the average total cost when you have a person who's been in bankruptcy to go check them out and make sure there's not a title problem? What's I don't want to know about 7 cents a page. I want to know what the total cost is on average for you to check out a bankruptcy.
Well, if there isn't anything, it's real cheap.
You're right.
So that's probably, I mean, if you take all the files, there may not be, but on an average situation where you find a bankruptcy, it again depends on the nature of the bankruptcy, whether it's been discharged or whether it's finished, and you can tell within one or two screens. If it's one that's pending, you may do a little more digging because you need to find out whether your property that's involved in the transaction you're handling is scheduled, or you might be looking to see whether or not a particular creditor who's got a judgment against your particular customer or person you're working with is scheduled, and so then you may dig into a couple more screens. But I would guess that you're talking about, you know, five or six screens at average. You know, you're not talking about a lot of cost in each file because I know what I pay on a quarterly basis, and you're talking, you know, every 3 months, I know it's maybe $50, but you know, it's not a big sum.
And all these costs here, you're dealing with out-of-pocket costs as opposed to in-house costs that relates to your organization.
Right, your operational costs.
Any other questions?
It's not a cost. I'm not turning around and passing the cost on my bankruptcy search onto a onto a customer file and saying, oh, you've incurred this much charge. It's just an operating cost of doing business.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, we thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Any other opponents to the proposal by the court administrator's office?
Justices, I'm Ernie Carlson from Sioux Falls, president of Land Title Guarantee Company. I'm also a member of the bar. I've been in the title business for before some of you were born, actually. Our problem on this
maybe,
is
maybe all of us.
Pardon?
Maybe all of us. Maybe you.
Maybe so. 57 years.
Two of us.
Yeah, two of us.
Our problem, to give you a brief idea of how we work, every morning our people go to the courthouse. They pick up items in the courthouse about 16 different places. That's all. The part of it goes into the general index, part of it goes into the tract index of the land. The deeds, mortgages, miscellaneous go into the tract indices. The rest of it goes into a general index, such as probates, divorces, judgments, trusts, county aid liens, state aid liens, change of name. There are about 12 of those go into the general index. They go into our computer index every morning. And we have two people check every item. Two people check it. Because we bet millions of dollars a year that our service is right. And it better be right, because we put our name on the line on the thing, and if it's not right, we're liable, of course, for it. And people are not interested in collecting claims. They want their titles right. In other words, if they buy a piece of property, they want to know it's not going to be taken away from them, and paid a certain amount of money by an insurance company for a claim. That material is then taken into our office and punched into the computers, the general index and also the tract indices every day. And but two people check everything we do is done by two people.
They work independently of each other?
Pardon?
They work independently of
yes.
each other?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Every item is double checked. I've tried it otherwise, and there's no other way you can do it. And as complicated as the title business is, there's no other way you can do it except by two
if
people.
If there's an error, do you have a remedy? Do you have insurance against defects in what you report?
We have a backing of underwriting companies, yes.
Okay. And do you have a claim, or do they have a claim against the clerk of court's office if they get money judgments wrong?
No.
They never pursue that?
I've never seen one, no.
Okay. And just a ballpark figure, how many claims do you get a year as to defective information?
Not very many, because if you had a lot of claims, we wouldn't be in business very long. But for instance, you're all members of the bar. You've always practiced law. Can you imagine that when you examine titles, if you had 1% of your, 1 out of 100 of your titles was wrong, you would not get, no bank would depend on your work, would they?
Right, so just to get a ballpark figure, you wouldn't even have 1 out of 1,000?
No. Oh, absolutely not. I couldn't live with it.
And I realize you can't speak exactly for, Midwest Title or the other title companies in Sioux Falls, but would the same be basically true for them? You're quite sure?
I can't speak for them, but our claims are very, very low because we do what we consider a superior job of checking, double check, everything double check.
All right. So going to the remedy, if the counties were to continue to note everything on cards so that your people could gather that information, so you could collect it down there at your own expense, would you object to paying whatever it worked out to be, the fair cost of them maintaining the system of the card index?
No, we can live with that. Our primary concern is the integrity of that title. We can't conceivably live with data being sent to peer, and then depending on somebody whom we don't know what their training is, sending that data back to us.
We don't know. You would have no faith in the system once the information goes to peer?
We couldn't rely on it. And our people, we've got to the people, three people that do the checking. They've had probably 50, 60 years of experience. We don't know the people up here, whether they've been working there 2 weeks. They don't maybe understand the Sondex system, the doctrines of idem sonens, and where you've got Smith spelled three or four different ways. Sabers could be spelled with an S-A-B-E-R, S-A-B-E-R-S. It comes into different Sondex code. And I don't know whether the system would pick that up or not. McCarlson, for instance, so my name, it could be spelled several different ways. It could be two R's, could be S-E-N, S-O-N minus S-E-N. And it wouldn't necessarily be picked up. So we've got to depend on our own records. If we can pick them up at the courthouse, we don't care if they go same time they go to peer or not, but we want those records. We want to be able to pick up those records in the courthouse.
So you object to the electronic system?
Pardon?
So you're objecting to the whole system?
No. Just as long as we have access to the records in Minnehaha County.
Which records, though? The docket cards or the file?
Judgments, probates, and divorces primarily is what you're talking about.
But you want the old docket cards, is what you're saying?
The rest of the stuff we get anyway.
But then you are objecting to this new system.
I have no objection to this. As long as we have access to those records ourselves, so we can, our own people can pick them up at the clerk's office.
You have no objection to the proposed system as long as they maintain the records as they presently are maintained.
Right. I believe I haven't checked this, but I think the statute provides that they to be maintained in the local county. Have anybody checked the statute on that? I think that's the statute provides for that. I'm sure it does.
Being the good attorney that you are, I'm surprised you haven't checked that.
Well, actually, I wasn't really aware of this until yesterday, and I had time to take a shower and jump in the car and take a look. So I haven't had a chance to check the statute, so no.
Okay, any other questions for Mr. Carlson? No, thank you for coming,
thank you,
sir.
For
appreciate
thank
it.
You. Okay.
Other opponents? Okay, Ms. Sudbeck, do you wish a rebuttal? Or a response or whatever?
Thank you, Your Honor. I guess I'll run down with the prepared comments I had, and then I'll try and respond to what I heard the opponents discuss. One of the things that concerns us is that the fees in the alternative proposed rule aren't tied to the cost of providing the information. And so we think this is contrary to the AG's opinion that allows for recouping costs of providing the information and also best business practices. The other thing we thought that from what we heard from some of the small abstractors in our meetings with them is that this system, the other proposed, even though they still have all the options we provided, but some of these small counties that have, or small companies that do multiple counties, and we know there are some that have, well, at least one we know that has four or more counties, and would they be willing to pay for $1,000 for each of those counties, which would be $4,000? No. If they have that many judgments, they drop down to the $3,000 that we already allow. Or from what we heard in the meetings, that this person said that he would be willing to go with the $5, $1. And at that time, we were proposing $5, $2 when we were discussing it. And I have, like I said, the cost of, or the amounts of judgments in some of those small counties. Clark County, for example, 122 estimated this year judgments and additions. They had actual 61 in the last 6 months. So we just doubled that to get 122. They would most likely want to go with the infrequent user cost because I think it would be a better deal for them.
Do you know the answer to the question that Ernie Carlson raised as to whether or not by law the indexed code system is supposed to be maintained?
I don't know what...
At no expense?
Not the index code at no expense. Well, talking about the statute that Mitch LaFleur raised, the 36-13-20, recitals and certificate of registration, and that is providing access to the abstractors to any of the offices of the state of South Dakota to make such memoranda or notation from the records thereof as may be necessary for the purpose of making such abstracts of title to property in the county in which he is qualified, and the compiling, posting, copying, and keeping up of their abstract books, indexes, or records, such access to be during ordinary office hours. I don't read this to say that the access has to be free, but they have to have access. I've never read this to say that it has to be free access.
Make an evaluation of what it costs to maintain that system as it is, and then impose that cost on the abstractors or title insurance people.
Well, impose the cost of the system onto anybody who's going to use it. One of my points is that I don't know, this court has broad authority over its records, but I don't know that this court has ever had authority to carve out a special exception for a special group of people, like a business, particular business. I think the legislature would have to do that, and the legislature has done that in other cases. In our 16-2-29, which lists all the fees that clerks require for different functions, record searching, certifying, there are different exceptions to those fees made for like state offices that have a pending action, school districts, anybody with a federal ORI number, which would include like the FBI and the IRS, get free searches of our data. That's been by legislative rule. As far as the some of the other comments, the PACER records, they've got a huge database, much bigger than our state judgment system with our 375 or up to 400,000 records. They have e-filing, so they have every single document that's filed with the court, all the briefs, all the motions, all the pleadings, all of those are on their PACER system. And so if we have that larger database, we might be able to get it down to 7 cents a page as well. Paying $5, I'm not wondering if you have the right name. We addressed that when we met with the abstractors, and we've got wildcard searching capability, which was available at the last meeting that we had with them. You can put in a single, like the last letter S, or the last name letter C, a single letter of the last name, and then the wild card, which I think is an asterisk, and get every judgment in the state that starts with the letter C for $5. You can do a name or a date range. If they say they don't want names, for $5, you do a date range. You can do a month. You can do a week. You can do, if you're only down in the office once a week and want to collect what were the judgments for that week, put in that date range for $5, you get all of those judgments. The judgments that were docketed. If you want to look at the specific judgment card, then that's $1 per search to look at that card and to print it and have access to that.
Are you saying for $5 you could get a whole year's worth of data?
Well, you could, but I think we're going to be having to put limits on that because we do have when we went with this other monthly and annual fee, I think we're going to have to put limits on that. But there would be limitations to that anyway, because they could get that information, but they wouldn't be able to download it, search it. They wouldn't get, like if it's updated the day after they do that search, they'd have to go in and pay that $5 again. With the monthly or the yearly fee, they would have what they want, which is unlimited access, which was the word they had in their proposed rule. They've got unlimited access to the system for that period of time. They'll get all the updates. They get a calendar that shows which dates they've already searched, so they don't have to redo that, although it wouldn't cost them anything if they did.
So you don't oppose that portion of their amendment, adding the word unlimited?
No, not at all. I don't know that it's necessary because we've got in our rule this information will include new civil money judgments and updated judgment information. If they're on board for a month or if they're on board for a year, depending on what subscription option they choose, they have all new money judgments, all the updates within that period of time.
If you have an abstract company that just does cover one county, I assume there are some, and they don't want to pay to search, is there an alternative?
and they don't want to pay to search? You mean they don't want to go with a monthly or a yearly?
Well, can they just do it the way they're doing it right now and not have to pay anything?
Docket cards are going to be gone, so they can't do it the way they're
doing. So really, we're forcing them to pay. And they're either going to have to pay $5 for name or date searches or $1 for judgment docket information.
Correct.
Or the $3,000.
Correct.
Okay, what about this, the situation where you have a company that's only going to want to search that county?
Then they can search that county.
It's the $3,000 is going to take care. If Ernie Carlson's company wants to, in Sioux Falls or in Minnehaha County, which has a huge amount of hits to the system, of $3,000 is the same as some abstract company that is not going to have that many hits to the system. They're going to have to pay the $3,000 as well.
That'd be a business decision they would make, and they don't
there's
have
nothing in between.
They don't. There is the $5, $1 in between. We have, I think Justice Gilbertson asked how many counties are over. We have 9 counties in the state over 20,000. And because of some of the abstract companies that are doing multiple counties, there would be even more than 9 that would be over 20,000 or looking at that kind of population information. And then the other 57 are under 20,000, obviously. Okay. The information is updated every 12 hours. I didn't mention that before, but I thought maybe that came up, and that was also cleared with the abstractors that was fine with them. It eliminates data entry functions for them because the information is there. They download it whenever they want to into their systems, and then they can search the data, manipulate it. They can have a computer programmer come in and change their system any way they want to work with this data.
What happens if the state system goes down? Is there any backup system?
I'd have to find that out, because what happens if our criminal justice information system goes down? We have our paper records. We haven't done away with those. We'll still have the paper records that include the judgment, but we've had our CJIS records up since 1989, and that hasn't gone down. I'd have to check with IT to find out. I'm sure that there are, you know, security.
Even with this system, the abstractors are still going to want to come to the clerk of court's office and, for example, look at divorce files.
That's what we understood from our meetings with them. They said for every single file, they will still want to come and look at the, they said they have to look at the copy of the judgment.
Do you charge for that now?
I don't think the clerks do, but I mean, there is.
Are you charging the abstractors to come in and look at those files?
No. By statute, there is a charge, a record search charge by statute, but it's not being
enforced charged. Against the abstractors.
Yeah, well, maybe to other groups too. No, it is to anybody. The CJIS records, for example, are being charged for, like, employers that need to get that information and do a background
check. Is that because the abstractors are accustomed to doing it? They can do it on their own without any help from the personnel?
They've been used
whereas
to.
Whereas the lay public comes in and they wouldn't know what to do, and they have to have the help of the clerk.
They have to have the help of the clerk, and the abstractors are used to going around the counter and just, you know, hands-on with the docket cards.
Now
once they have the docket cards, they have a docket file number, and so they can give that number to the clerk, and the clerk doesn't have to look anything up except take that number to the file and pull the file for them.
What about these big companies that search for credit worthiness and so forth?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a separate system they search on, or is this the same system?
This would be the same system. They would have access to it at wherever. They would not be coming to the clerk's offices. That's why we set up, if they want the historic database, they could have it for 20 years back. And then I would expect they would want to do it every year as well. One of the things this eliminates as far as the docket system, too, the statute requires the contents of the card. And the judgment entry. And one of the things it requires is cross-referencing if there is more than one debtor. This system takes that possibility of error away because the clerk doesn't have to do the cross-referencing. This system does once it's in there once.
Is there any thought to some kind of a trial period before this, to allow the use of this for a 30-day free use with the backup at the same time with the docket cards to make sure that, or maybe 90 days or whatever, because, you know, all of these things sound good in theory, but you're depending upon a whole lot of things out of your control, i.e. the IT, you know, not our computer, but the state's computer. Yeah. And it seems to me that there should be some, I don't know whether this is, I guess I didn't look at that part of it, but whether there's a date certain, but I'm wondering if we shouldn't also add some kind of a trial period.
Pilot program authorized.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, for how long?
Well, non-payment.
The pilot program would be non-payment. The rule would propose that this rule with the fee structure be effective December 31, 2005, and that we would have the system in place by January 1, 2006. If we can get the system up and running, and we're very close to that now, we would get it out there and people could use it, or we could even have select people. We could ask the Abstractors Association rather than not the public yet, but please help us test this out and have free access to the system while we still have both systems in place. The other thing I wanted to mention, I think Mr. Carlson talked about not trusting the people in the state office. The clerks are still doing the entering. They've done it forever. They're still going to do it. It's just that, you know, they entered it into a docket entry system that was computerized before. It's just that they also had cards. Now they're still doing the same function. But with this computer system, it's going to do some of the entry features for them, like this cross-referencing, which will help eliminate some errors.
Have you checked the statute to make sure that that in eliminating the cards, we're not violating some state statute?
Yes, I have checked that. The statute site is 15-16-6. It's been in existence since 1939 with an update in 1990, and I'll find out what that update was. But it talks about entering and indexing judgments in the judgment docket. It doesn't say docket book. It doesn't say docket card. It doesn't say computerized docket. It just says a docket. And this is going to be the docket.
And what about there was some suggestion here that the court system is going to guarantee the accuracy of this data. Is there going to be a disclaimer?
Yes, there will. It'll be just as accurate as it is now. You know, I mean, it eliminates, like I said, the cross-reference, as many things as we can eliminate as far as human error, we will. But there will be a disclaimer that this is as accurate as the information we have. So, and that's going to be on the instructions right on the web page.
A simple typo can throw somebody's title into question.
Yeah. As it can now.
Right.
Okay. Anything further?
I don't think so, unless you have any more questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Any final comments from Mr. Marino, Mr. LaFleur, or Mr. Carlson?
The only comment I would add in response to it is I think that statute I referenced earlier in Title 36, I don't know if I agree entirely with Mrs. Sundbeck's position that there's nothing that prevents us from being charged. I always thought that if you're going to be charged to assess the fee for operating, the statute authorized the charging process as opposed to the opposite. But so that was my only reservation. I think that statute specifically authorizes us access to those records, and if it contemplated a cost to be incurred, then it would spell that out.
I don't think that's part of our rule, though. I don't think there's any suggestion that you're going to be charged to do that, at least not today.
But I mean, even the docket cards. And I think there is. I mean, we are going to be charged a fee to access those docket cards, which we are not going to charge now.
Right. But even under your proposal, you would be charged, right?
I understand that.
Okay.
And that's, but I want, but what I'm hoping is that the court realizes that that's part of the reason for the proposal, and we're trying to compromise and work with the court administrator's office to come up with some reason.
Okay.
We'd probably appreciate any legal research you wanted to do in that respect and then supply to the court for your association to do any legal research in respect to that.
As far as
if you've got any suggestions or if you're recommending that any law, say, prohibits a cost or requires a cost or implements a cost.
Well, I think the only thing I can reference is that statute doesn't authorize, in my opinion, at this point, a cost to be assessed to us for accessing that information. But, you know, the court's going to look at that statute yourselves and make that decision. But that would be my position for the matter.
I, I just have one more question for Ms. Sudbeck, and two. Now, if I'm understanding, then this is, will this have more information on it than the docket, the docket cards they look at, or is that what this is?
Supposed
so that's
to replace.
Really what we're doing.
It would have
before
no more.
We didn't charge them to come in and look at it. Now we're going to charge them to look at it.
It would have no more or less information that's required by statute to be on that docket card.
Okay. So it's basically the docket card. They don't get it. They don't get any advantage or any more information than they would have.
They don't get any more information. The benefit is that it is, it's eliminating a trip to the courthouse for them to look through this docket card. Now, if there are still judgments that they want to look at the actual judgment, they need to come to the courthouse, and unless sometime in the future we have electronic filing. But the other thing it eliminates is they download this whole system, and there are no more data entry for them.
So this is an add-on cost that they've never had before.
This is an add-on cost they've never had before. If I just might mention, too, what Mr. LaFleur just said, I think they are being charged, and I think they said that today, by the Register of Deeds in the county office for the information for the county records. So if they're going under the 36-1320, saying that they have never been charged a fee, I think my understanding of what they've said is that they do get a flat fee charge from the county for those records.
I've got one more, too. Are we making this change because UJS wants to make a change in the inexorable march to the digital age, or is this something that abstractors came to you and said we want?
This is not something abstractors came and said that they wanted. We've tried to work with the abstractors to make sure that whatever we do works with what they need, and I thought that from the meetings we've had, we've been responsive. Their comments have been very helpful. And we did talk about the bait system and the sound decks, and we've, you know, discussed all of those and addressed as many as we could.
So I think this is part of our
ongoing. How do we handle the huge volume of records that we have? And you know, I'm sure when we were doing docket books and the clerks with their, you know, beautiful script writing that in, we didn't have almost 400,000 judgments with a million activities associated, updating activities associated with them a year.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've got one for Mr. LaFleur.
Mr. LaFleur, I guess you're not done yet.
Either Mr. LaFleur or Mr. Marino, I detect that you're not speaking with one voice here based on Mr. Carlson's comments. As I heard them, he objects in total to this elimination of docket cards. And I didn't, I took it that the Land Title Association was not making that objection.
I think there's I would say there's not a uniform consensus on that issue. And I think that Mr. Carlson has, his comments are good comments. I mean, they are legitimate concerns. And I think you probably could tell from my response to you, I have some reservations myself for the same reasons that were spelled out by Mr. Carlson, because we do ensure these transactions, and it's our money on the line, so accuracy is a great concern to us. And cost can be a factor as well, because we've had some good times, but you can have bad times. You know, the word concern, and all of a sudden, those costs can become an issue for the title company. And I think the concern about those costs are very genuine. We are very concerned that there's not any way to accommodate under the state's proposal a way to handle that one county versus multiple county issue, where you're going to get stuck for a $3,000 deal, because $5 a day, because everybody's going to update their deal daily. Right there, you've got at least a minimum $100 a month. And then for every day, you've got that dollar pop, and that can add up huge.
Well, Buffalo County's not going to be doing theirs every day, are they? Would Buffalo County be doing it every day? Or places like that?
You know what? Maybe not. But you're going to update pretty quickly, because you may ask them to go on it. If you get an order from a non-local place, you know, so it depends. I'm not in Buffalo, so but I understand it's a legitimate question. And maybe not, but they're gonna.
Okay. Any other final comments? If not, the court will consider these comments. We did receive some in writing on all three proposals, and we'll address these proposed amendments in the near future. Thank you. We're in recess.